already started.
You are listening to Jump Scare, the podcast that sees it coming. I'm Shanice, a longtime horror fan.
And I'm Will, also a longtime horror fan.
And Jump Scare is a podcast that is here to look back, look ahead, and get down and bloody with horror movies. Our show has a very simple format, unlike most horror movies. We're going to talk about the movie. We're going to give you the plot in just 10 words. We're going to do our best what the fuck moments, which are best scare, most iconic moment, the entire body count. And then we're going to give our up the stairs instead of out of the house award for our dumbest decision. We're going to talk about the cultural significance of our movie. Then we're going to say, what would this movie be like now? And how we would basically write it for today's audiences. And like with every episode, we've got an arc. And our current arc is Cabins.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk to us about Cabins, Will?
Yeah. So Cabins is a thing in horror. We have been looking at some classic cabin horror films that take place in cabins or around cabins or underneath cabins. And so we've been looking at the original Friday the 13th. We did Evil Dead. We did Cabin Fever. These are all movies that have horny teens, bad decisions, some level of divine or not divine retribution involved in them.
And they've also got, so typically the way that we thought when we were talking about this arc was that a cabin has a slasher. It's a, you know, a gory killer. But I think that that's obviously not true from the films that we've picked. But what I think that we can say is that they're all gory.
Yeah, definitely. There is an element of heavy, like extreme gore, certainly in the ones that we've watched. And I think that is part of the sort of standard cabin movie. It's that they get killed with some level of creative horror.
You got to be creative. You're in the fucking woods.
Right.
So our current movie, we are doing Cabin in the Woods. And in honor of that, we are drinking bubbly. What are we drinking?
So we're drinking cheap champagne in paper cups as if we were at an office party.
Which is how this film starts. All right. So Cabin in the Woods, 2012, Drew Goddard.
Yeah, so Drew Goddard directed this. This is his directorial debut. We really are somehow all of our movies have been directorial debuts. That's not the arc we're doing. It's just, it's happened. And I also think that there's something too, like if you want to make your first horror movie and you don't have a lot of money, you go to a cabin.
Exactly. You like, do the like refrigerator sort of thing where it's all in one. Is it a refrigerator? Yeah, it's like a refrigerator episode in a show.
Oh, a bottle episode.
Bottle episode, whatever. Yeah. Refrigerator sounded funnier, but it's basically that. It's like a cheaper way to do it. I also think that like if you're doing a horror movie and it's your first directorial like thing, this is the most punk rock thing that you can fucking do because you get to play with so much blood. You get to play with the creative way that people die.
Mm-hmm. Totally. You just have kind of a blank canvas and you have the atmosphere that I think can be one of the more expensive things to generate, kind of ready-made, just by, you know, having a creepy cabin in the middle of nowhere. Yeah, so Drew Goddard has known Joss Whedon, who co-wrote and produced this movie, through his work with Buffy and Angel. Goddard had been a screenwriter on both those shows. Goddard has also written Cloverfield and...
Wait, really?
Yeah.
No fucking way.
Right before this, he wrote Cloverfield, and he would go on to write The Martian and World War Z.
Wow, he's like a renaissance man in terms of like horror, because these are all very, very different, but very good types of movies.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, I agree. I think him and Joss Whedon are both working in this like newish kind of genre you might call like pop horror.
For sure, yep.
You know? Yeah, like Cloverfield, this movie, Buffy, Angel, Alias, which they both did a lot of work on.
Oh my god, Alias is so good.
Yeah. they're all like pop horror, pop sci-fi. They're essentially like almost like rom-com or like standard teen movie tropes, but with like elements of sci-fi or horror. Cabin in the Woods is a unique movie, but also I think slots right into that with like, you could see this and Buffy and Angel and Cloverfield and also like the Avengers as like part of this same sort of like pop culture space, if that makes sense.
That actually makes a lot of sense, and I'm glad that you taught me that, essentially, because I think that this movie, obviously, this is a spoiler-heavy podcast, so if you haven't seen it, you're shit out of luck.
Yeah.
But
go watch
this
it.
Is very, like, Buffy, Alias, these are all Avengers, like, these are all things that exist in a world of what if we already knew about these things. And, like, the easiest way to explain what I'm trying to say is, what is a zombie movie when the characters in the movie know about zombies?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, it's just, it's meta in a way that's not really meta because it places itself so much in the real world.
Yeah.
which makes a lot of sense because I think I could probably pinpoint a shit ton of episodes of Buffy that he wrote because it's very much the same sort of, like, laughs.
Mm-hmm.
That's so crazy. So this movie's very unique. And what made it so unique is the marketing for it, especially. Because I think that typically when you are watching a trailer or, you know, getting ready to watch a movie, you don't know too much about it. And they did not shy away whatsoever.
No.
In the trailers, in commercials for this, in the marketing taglines of, like, this isn't your typical, but it is your typical horror movie.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Like, the poster, which you've probably seen, it's just the cabin itself just like in air as opposed to like on the ground. It looks like a typical horror movie poster, and yet if you've seen the movie, you know what you're looking at
because it's got that sub-level. Like, even though yeah. It looks like a cabin, it's like sort of pieced apart, so you're kind of like, wait, what?
Yeah. Yeah, there's so much in this movie that makes sense after you've seen it. So it's a movie you want to watch more than once. But yeah, what actually was the tagline for this?
So this had several taglines, and this is going to take some time, y'all, but I'm going to read all of them because they're all so good. So we've got, if you hear a strange sound outside, have sex. If an old man warns you not to go there, make fun of him. Quaint abandoned property, sold. You think you know the story? If the basement door swings open, go down there. This one's my favorite. Five friends go to a cabin in the woods. Bad things happen. We work with what we have.
I love that.
So good. There is a greater good, and for that you must be sacrificed. That one kind of sucks. I feel like that one might be one of the Blu-ray ones, actually.
Yeah, probably.
And then the last one is, if something is chasing you, split up. As a horror fan, you're like, this is my shit. Because
yeah.
I know all of these beats, and you're clearly catering to a horror fan.
Yeah, and you're also giving away the tone of the movie. This is a movie, like you said, where it knows what it is, and it's probably going to be playing with those ideas. But it's not purely a comedy. It's not, like, Scary Movie.
No, you know? And it's, like, it is a horror because it does have the horror elements, even mm-hmm. if it's, you know, sort of not mocking them, but paying homage in a very mocking way. But it does have the horror elements, and it does have, like, sort of the elements almost of, like, a psychological horror, but it is funny. Like, it's, I truly think that this film is in a league of its own.
Yeah, I do too. I think, obviously, it has a lot of forebears, not just in traditional horror, but also, like, horror comedy. Like, there's a lot of Evil Dead here, and it's not just the, like, individual moments from Evil Dead, that many of which they recreate exactly, and it's awesome. But the tone of Evil Dead, and especially Evil Dead 2, last week when we did Cabin Fever, we talked about how, you know, I had to give that movie a little bit of a break, which I didn't want to do because I really enjoyed hating that movie coming in. Because it didn't have, you know, it was made before Shaun of the Dead. It was made before Tucker and Dale vs. Evil. And it was made before the whole smart horror renaissance that we've seen. Well, Cabin in the Woods was made after these movies.
Right.
You know, it's very much on sort of the far side of the rebirth of horror, commercially, artistically, the rebirth of horror comedy, and also, like, the whole Joss Whedon, you know, early aughts project of self-referential teen entertainment.
I honestly think that without Cabin in the Woods, we don't get the Showtime Ash versus Evil Dead.
Mm.
We don't get some of these, like, sort of really smart, like you said, smart horror, because it was a sort of thing that hadn't really been tested with larger audiences.
Yeah, that's true.
So what is the box office? What's the budget for this?
Budget is $30 million. And that is a lot. I mean, I don't know if it's a ton of money for a big budget Hollywood movie, but for horror, it's a very high budget. And compared to the movies that we've been looking at, which, you know, Halloween, $400,000, Friday the 13th, $500,000, Evil Dead, I think, was about $500,000. So this is a categorically different level of expense. And
it's that Joss Whedon money.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So it cost about $30 million to make, and it returned internationally, or returned domestic and internationally, about $70 million.
Which is amazing, I think.
I think so too, yeah.
It did really well domestically, for sure. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm not surprised because I think we've talked about this, but I think that the cabin sort of trope works well in America because, like, that's a real thing that we do here. Not to say that right. they don't do it in other places, but, like, cabins are so ingrained in, like, American culture. Like, I'm going to go lock myself away in a cabin. Like, it makes sense.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And then 28-ish million international, which I think makes sense. Like, a big budget, entertaining American horror movie. It would be interesting to see how audiences, like, received it internationally. Because, you know, I assume, like, a lot of the world, especially Europe, where this did really well, Britain and France, like, they have a lot of the same reference points. And certainly they're inundated with American culture. So, like, they're familiar with these things. But it would be interesting to see what a non-American audience would make of, like, such a self-referential movie.
Yeah, I think, and, like, that's what's hard is that this movie does reference so much of pop culture, of American pop culture, that it's sort of hard. Like, I'd be interested to see, like, what they thought of it, because it's the sort of thing that even if you didn't watch any of these horror films, you know of it.
Yeah.
Because of American television, because of, like, even music, because of, you, like, look at hip hop and rap. Like, there was a point in time, like, in the early 90s where they were super into horror movies. Rappers were being invited to, like, horror premieres, so... Oh,
that's interesting, really.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That'll be a whole episode, but it's the sort of thing where I think that it did so well here because it is our pop culture.
Mm-hmm.
We just understood it. So, I feel like it's hard to put this plot in 10 words because the taglines did it so well for us.
Do you wanna make an attempt?
I can try. Yeah. I mean, I'm probably just gonna steal one of the taglines, which is, oh man, like, five friends go to a cabin in the woods, bad things happen.
Yeah.
Like, straight up, like, that's it. Bad things happen.
I like it. I would say, like, ancient demand for boobs and stabbing create corporate growth opportunity.
Oh my god, this reminds me of my favorite part of the movie, which is, I'm an intern! It's a hard film to put into 10 words, because it's just, you think you know this movie, and you fucking don't.
Yeah, the first time I watched it, probably the first time most people watched it, it's such a mindfuck, because as some reviewers point out, you're watching two stereotypical movies that don't seem to have anything to do with each other. And they're in no rush to, like, combine the two, which is part of the genius of this. It plays with the horror idea that there's something wrong, that there's something going on in this really subtle way. Because, like, well, it's like, it's a very overt way, but it's also like, here are two movies that we completely understand because we've seen them so many times, but we don't understand why they go together. And there's like chaos and dissonance at the margins of both of them.
Right. It also, like, this movie immediately from the start throws you off, because it doesn't start the way that a horror movie should start.
Mm-hmm.
It starts in a very weird way. And I'll explain it in a little bit, which is, like, something I would hate to say on a podcast, but it's one of my moments.
Uh-huh, right. Oh,
which is, like, great. So our next segment are some of our what the fuck moments.
Yeah, there are so many. So we generally divide this into best scare, which is, like, defined broadly, and then most iconic moment. And then we're going to run through the body count, which can be surprisingly illuminating for some of these movies. So, Shanice, what is your best scare?
So, okay. So, best scare is, thank you for saying that it's defined broadly.
Yeah.
Because we need it. My best scare is the first death, because it's such an interesting twist on this kill.
Mm-hmm.
It's a kill that we've seen time and time again in a horror movie. The couple that's getting it on, the girl dies. However, we're watching this, and it's scary because, I don't know, women dying on a movie screen always scares me.
Yeah.
But it's also just like, it's scary because it's so fucked up, because we're watching it happen to her as a person watching a horror movie that we think we know, and then we're watching the fucking watchers of the people who are setting it up. And like, it just like is, it's the best scare, because it's like, turn on the pheromones and the like, the fog rolls in, the moonlight, like all of these things. And it's just sort of like, wow, this is really fucked, because we're watching two men who we presume do this yearly, annually, probably.
Right. Yeah.
And they're so bored with it.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that's what's so scary, is that it's the sort of thing of like, fuck, this is a boring concept. And am I just shitty for wanting to watch people die? Do you know what I mean? Like, it sets you up for this whole, if you're a horror fan, it sets you up for this very like meta weird thing that you have to go through in your mind. But I think also, as a person who may not be a fan of horror, it fucking is scary, because you're kind of like, oh God, I don't want to think about what I'm thinking about.
Yeah, it really, it turns the film on the viewers. It's like scary in like a thoughtful way.
Exactly. It's, yeah.
Like, you're like, you are the villain. You are the monster.
Exactly. Because you're rooting for this. They even like make fun of him, and they're like, well, like the whole boob thing. They're like, we're not the only ones watching. And it's like, you're not. The ancient gods are, and we are. And we all know that boobs sell. So I'm a bad person. What's your best scare?
So my best scare is also defined broadly, and it's the opening scene, and it's they go through the whole dialogue, and I was telling Shanice before we started recording that I love seeing Bradley Whitford with some like West Wing-esque dialogue again, because he's so good at it. And it's just this like charmingly uncharming conversation between two very male workers about fertility or something.
Yeah, it's about like the kid. She put up all the childproofing, and we don't have a kid yet.
Yeah. I just realized that like they're talking about fertility, and that's like the ancient right.
And
like how far they are from that. That's so interesting. But so they have this whole conversation. They talk to a coworker. They hop in these little like all these little like corporate go-karts to get to somewhere. And as they start driving, the title comes on the screen, Cabin in the Woods, and this like screeching noise. I love that. It's the only jump that I wasn't expecting. And it's also just, it's so perfect.
It's so funny too, because like in an article that I was reading that we'll link in the show notes, they wanted purposefully to start this movie as a different movie.
Mm.
And they had to convince the studio to let them have this opening scene, because they're like, people are going to be fucking confused. And they're like, that's the point.
Yeah.
We want people to be confused. And that is, it is kind of scary, because you're so off base that you're kind of like convinced as a viewer, like, I'm watching, because we don't see them in any of the trailers.
Yeah.
So we see all the things that happen around them in that like basement level, but we don't see them, or not that I can remember. And you're kind of like, oh, this is the wrong thing. And then you get the fucking title and you're like, oh, shit. Like,
you're like, wait, what am I watching?
Truly out of nowhere.
Sometimes people ask me, and I'm curious if they ask you the same thing, Shanice. Like, how do you watch all those horror movies? Doesn't it scare you? And it absolutely does scare me. And certain things scare me more than others. But also, if you watch a lot of horror movies, you learn how to watch them.
Yes.
And it drastically mitigates the effect. Like, oh, I know that camera angle. Something's going to be over her left shoulder, you know, any minute now. And if it isn't, then it was a fake. And so now that the music stopped and she turns around, then, like, we know how to anticipate. And so Cabin in the Woods throwing that title sequence in puts you on your guard even though this is not a particularly scary movie, puts you on your guard in a way because you're like, oh shit. It's like in a video game when like they take away your best weapon or something. Yeah. You're like, uh-oh, now what do I do?
The hatchet broke. What are you going to do?
Yeah, exactly.
But no, I agree. It's sort of like, I think that what made this movie so great is that it's for horror fans and for people who aren't horror fans. Mm-hmm. And that opening scene truly proves that because you've, in one fell swoop, have put everyone, no matter what their experience is with horror, on their toes.
Yeah.
It's so great. It's so good. So now we have our most iconic moment.
Mm-hmm.
What do we classify as an iconic moment, Will?
It's a good question. And sometimes it's like you know it when you see it. I think it's a moment that captures the essence of the film, that is important to like horror history or cinematic history, something that captures the mood and sort of answers the question in like an image, why are we watching this movie?
Right, which is very well defined. Good job. So my most iconic moment I'm going to talk about because it's my favorite scene in the movie. So we rewatch these movies every time that we've got to do the podcast. Mm-hmm. And this movie is a movie that I will rewatch forever. I don't fucking care. And this this particular scene is a scene that I will always rewind, pause on, because it's so great. And it's the elevator scene. Which is like hard to define a scene because like I'm probably talking about 10 minutes of the movie. But the minute that the two survivors get into the elevator, they start seeing all of the monsters that they could have picked between.
Yeah.
Which is not only great because it shows you how smart this movie is, that like we're not going to tease you with these possible killers. We're also going to show them to you in their truest form. It's not only that, but it's just like when they pan out, the amount of Easter eggs and hints and homages in that is amazing to me because you can point out all of the different monsters that we have to deal with in horror movies. But the funniest one, and I could be wrong because I don't have like a super amazing television. I mean, it's pretty great. But but the funniest one for me is there's a elevator like the square and it's filled with like the frat brothers. Which I didn't notice the first couple times that I've watched this movie, but like this time I watched it with my fiance, who, sorry to disappoint y'all, is a frat boy, but like an academic frat. Uh-huh. And we're watching it and I'm like going through it and I'm like telling him like, yeah, this is an homage to this and like this is Evil Dead and blah. And I was just like, I don't understand what the whole bunch of dudes yelling is, but like whatever, that sounds scary to me. And Eric's like, that's hazing. And I was like, oh shit. Like that scene is so great because all of that just like is just so amazing because there's so many layers to like what we find scary.
Yeah.
And what's in a horror movie that I was kind of like, fuck, yes. And then they all come out and kill each other and it's just a bloodbath and I love it.
It's so cool. So first of all, that's why this movie cost $30 million, they said.
All the blood and like
and
CGI.
Making all those creatures. They had like 70 people working on it at one point.
Oh, interesting fact.
Yeah.
The merman and the werewolf are played by the same person.
Really?
I noticed in the credits because it said merman / werewolf. And I was like, nice.
That is a cool credit.
So that was definitely practical effect.
Yeah.
Aside from like the legs. But that's amazing.
Yeah. That was so cool. Especially because he spits blood out. He like shoots blood out his blowhole. Because when he was eating it, I and then probably everyone was thinking like, wait, why is this such a mess? And then you're like, oh, that's why cleanup is so hard on a merman.
I told you before we recorded last episode that I fucking hate fish. And definitely this movie has something to do with it because it's gross to think about how they function.
Guys, we're gonna start a pool on how long it's going to take for me to convince Shanice to do a shark / sea creature arc.
It's going to be terrible.
Jaws, the reef, it's the beast.
Terrifying. All very. We don't know what's in the ocean, Will. Okay, so what's your most iconic moment?
So my most iconic moment is the office party, and specifically when Papa Redneck Torture, is just like tossing around the girl, the virgin. I forget her name.
The quote-unquote virgin.
Yeah, quote-unquote virgin. Yeah, we'll get to that. And the music starts, and everyone like starts popping open drinks. And it goes, first of all, it's an incredible visual. And it's hilarious and unsettling at the same time. And it absolutely goes to what you picked as your best scare, the sort of like, is this really what we watch for fun? Like, are we really this jaded and or like addicted to this sort of like horrific display? Is this who we are? Are we the ancient ones? And I think it's just such a well done image. And like, if you wanted to capture Cabin in the Woods and that whole genre of like self-referential horror comedy, I think that moment really, really captures it.
It is super iconic. And I think what also makes it iconic is that it is the sort of thing where this is what makes this movie, because that's a turning point. And it's not only a turning point because technically the final girl is dying. It's a turning point because it's a reminder of like, you're not watching what you think you're watching. You're watching someone else watching this. Like, it's just like such a perfect moment to be like, okay, now here's the real fucking core of this movie, and now we're taking it to the next level.
Yeah.
Like, it's just so fantastic, and it's the sort of thing that almost, like, kind of reminds me, like, what happens after a horror movie's over? Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it just gives us so much context and substance to essentially what is 100% a very outdated fucking trope and story. We always know what happens. They either die at the end or they don't. They survive. Like, who cares? Whatever.
Yeah.
We already know that. This is like, you don't fucking know that, because here's what fucking happens when things don't go according to plan.
Yeah. It's great. It's also like the classic we're safe scene.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's told in like the corporate world. And then the phone rings, the red phone.
Well, it's the red phone, but like, it's the moment right before it rings where he's like giving the like operations, I don't know, the fucking blow up team.
Uh-huh.
Like, he's like giving them shit, and he's like, hey, like, you didn't do this. And they were like, listen, dude, like, that wasn't us. There was a mistake from above. And he's like, what the fuck do you mean from above? And then the fucking phone rings and you're like, we know what you mean by above. Like, we're suddenly ahead of the characters.
Yeah, right.
For the first time in this movie. It's weird because that scene is so iconic because the perspective has suddenly shifted. We start this movie off with being a little ahead of the game because we know that there's this office and that there's this weird thing happening and that these teens, or I guess young adults, are being forced to live through this thing. And now suddenly our perspective changes because no longer are they ahead of the curve. The two kids are.
Yeah,
and now
right.
We are, because we're the audience, we're again ahead of the game. Like, we understand what's happening, and it's like, oh fucking shit, perspective's changing. This is amazing.
That is so interesting. Yeah, the flip of the dramatic irony all of a sudden.
Chef's kiss. It's beautiful.
It is. It really is.
So this film has like the weirdest fucking body count, technically.
Yeah, I don't even know. I mean, technically, you could say it's like what, 7.8 billion people?
So
off screen?
Yeah, that's the thing. So if you haven't watched the movie, essentially the two kids don't sacrifice themselves and humanity suffers and the ancient gods reach from the depths of the earth and take over.
Yeah.
So everyone dies. However, in my research, there are officially 69 bodies that we see fall on screen.
Oh, nice.
Which,
that you
have... nice. 69.
Oh, I didn't even mean that. Yeah. Nice. Nice.
But it's 69 bodies that we see fall on screen.
That's hilarious.
It was totally on purpose. I refuse to believe
it. Oh, no question.
But so many people die. Like, this movie ends in the most depressing way of like,
yeah.
Fuck humanity. We're all fucking shit out of luck.
Yeah. I was shocked that all of the office workers die. That, like, Bradley Whitford dies, and the other guy dies, and the woman dies. And I guess it's like justice, but I don't know. I was kind of rooting for them.
What?
I don't know. The movie, it's underneath a lot of this. I guess we sort of talked about it. There's this sympathy for power that I think works on an audience. Whether it's like, yeah, look at that zombie male torture and beat up that woman. It's okay. Or like, yeah, I want this to work out. I know it's like a horrible corporation whose job it is to kill people horrifically. But they just seem like such nice people, and they're like working hard, and it'd be nice to just see things work out for them.
They're just doing a job.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, if you wanted to get dark about it, like, this is how injustice remains in power.
Right.
And so I think it's interesting that that works on, and maybe it didn't work on most people who watched this, but it did. It was functioning on me. And so that, you know, is a little unsettling.
I think it didn't work on me. It may have a little bit. I mean, I do feel really bad for he gets his mermaid death or merman death, and it's not everything that he wants. And like, I was kind of like, man, I really wanted you to have like the kind of death you wanted. But I think it almost didn't work on me because I work in marketing.
Oh, right.
So I'm just kind of just like, it's a very different sense of like sympathy for like an office worker. I'm just kind of like, fuck off. Oh, man. No, I could see like rooting for them for sure.
Yeah.
Especially like when you get to the end, you're kind of like, shit, I wish y'all had been successful because now we're all going to die.
Yeah, right. That's true too.
And I think it's kind of hard to like figure out what you expect as a body count in this. So like in a body count for a cabin film, I can't remember off the top of my head, but they've been relatively low. It's like been under 15.
Mm-hmm.
And this is so high, but I think that it's so hard to pinpoint what kind of deaths you expect from this. And I think that the film itself makes fun of that because, again, They are very sympathetic characters because we have the whole office is participating in a death pool and like how they're going to die. But I think that they say it best themselves when they're like, it's a difference between a zombie and zombie redneck family torture.
Right.
Because it's the sort of thing of like, you think that these are the same exact thing. You think you're watching like a regular cabin movie and you're not. So it's just like a weird, like the body count is weird because it's not one movie. Like that's what makes this movie so great that it's like, it's multiple movies sort of wrapped into one.
Yeah, that's true. It is. And so it's very hard to quantify. And it's like, I think we see 7 named characters die.
Yeah.
But I guess 62 non-named characters die.
The fucking rest of us.
Yeah.
So this is going to be an interesting segment. We talk about this with every movie, but I feel like we both really love this movie. So what didn't work?
Oh, it didn't work. Yeah, this is hard. What didn't work here? I don't think this hurts the movie. I don't think this is a real knock, but it was not. I didn't find it particularly scary, which does not, to me, hurt the experience of watching it at all. In fact, having some scenes be like actually dark and unsettling or like frightening might have actually warped the tone of the whole thing a little bit and seemed out of place. But if I was going to knock anything, I would say that it was not actually scary.
I could see that. I could see that not working. It's hard for me to like think about what didn't work because there's so much of this movie that does work. especially because I feel like it's the sort of movie that is made for horror fans and people who aren't fans of horror. Yeah. There's just so much going on. I would say like what didn't work is sort of the pacing. I feel like things towards the end happen so quickly that possibly this is obviously on purpose, but we're not really given the time to think it through. Like, of course, this is the kind of movie you have to watch a second time because you're kind of like, they find themselves in that elevator very quickly.
Yeah.
And then out of it very quickly. I'm just kind of like, whoa. Like, what? And now she's killed the dude who was killing her. Like, it just felt, it just felt too quick. And part of that is because of my favorite scene. Like, it's because all of these monsters are out. So, of course, right. The movie has to end very quickly. Or even the ending with Sigourney Weaver. Like, I just wish that there was more. I want more context.
Yeah.
And of course, like, I want that because I'm a horror fan and I want, you know, the history and why this is happening. So, like, that just didn't work for me. Like, I want more of an explanation as to what's happening.
Yeah.
Versus, like, bam, 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 bam. You got to end this movie, wrap it up. It's going on too long.
Yeah, totally. I agree. Another, like, an extra 10 minutes in the facility before they, like, get found out might have been cool. With them just, like, exploring how it works or, like, the history. Like, is this corporation, like, 3,000 years old? Is it relatively new? Did someone used to do this and now they do it? Or is this, like, some organization that is, as society has modernized, become more and more, like, corporate, and it's like, oh, like, it makes sense to integrate, like, contemporary management techniques. Like, this will run most efficiently as a business, but, like, you know, 1,000 years ago, we were just like around a fire in a cave somewhere doing this.
Exactly. And yeah. I think that extra 10 minutes could have easily been something that you and I talked about before recording, was understanding why these folks were chosen.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how, not, you don't have to tell me how you got the girl to dye her hair, but like, why them? What made it so easy to be them? Like, aside from like, we work with what we have and you were the closest to being a virgin.
That's hilarious.
Like, these characters, yeah.
She's like, virgin?
These characters are so, they're basic, like any horror movie. So like, why these kids? Like, what is it that made them so easy to, like, I just want to know why they were picked. And I think that's an extra 10 minutes of like, her and him like running across like a computer that said, you know, very likely to survive.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, we're almost given like an idea that she, there's a reason that she's the final girl.
Yeah.
But I want to know why.
Yeah, right. Is it hard to find the right group of kids?
God, this show would make such, this movie would make such a good miniseries.
It really would, right?
Of, like, the culmination of like how we picked these kids.
Yeah.
Oh, it's like The Office, but hell.
Yeah, like 5 years previously.
So historical context of this film is kind of interesting because it's sort of the latest of the years of the films that we've done. Like, it's the closest to what year it is right now.
Right. This is a movie that, like we talked about, is absolutely post-horror comedy, post, like, 2000s explosion of horror. We're thinking critically about horror and also, like, not accepting the premise that if you're going to make a horror movie, then you have to make a bad movie.
Right.
You know? And I think that in, like, the 70s, they had that idea. Spielberg made, he's like, I'm going to make Jaws, and it might be a horror movie, but it's also going to be one of the greatest movies ever made. Or The Shining, or, you know, there's lots of examples. And then there was, I feel like the 80s dumbed down a lot of this stuff. And we love
Quick
it.
Buck.
Yeah, exactly. Because you could. And then the 90s were such a dark time for horror. But then you had movies like Let the Right One In, and 28 Days Later, and like, and Scream, and The Ring, and all the Japanese horror. And, like, good, talented filmmakers were making horror, thinking critically, doing interesting things, not accepting that horror has to be stupid or of poor quality. And, I think this movie is the apotheosis of that. And then, like you were saying, also made possible so much of what happened in the 2010s to, like, go farther and do even more experimental stuff with horror.
Well, I think that I completely agree with you. I think it's the sort of thing where suddenly we realize that you could tell a story mm-hmm. in a horror movie. It doesn't have to be about the kills. It doesn't have to be about the gore. There could be an actual story to it, and like a mythos, and like, just there's a whole story built around what's happening in this movie. And I think it's the sort of thing where we're no longer, what this is mocking because of the way that it's set up, is we're no longer just dropped into a horror movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, things are already happening around us and whatever. We just have to watch these people be killed. It was the sort of thing of like, no, what happens before? Why is it happening? What's happening during it? Like, it's just this sort of thing where it's like, it's true sort of storytelling that people were like, you can do that in a horror? It's like, yeah, you can tell a story when people die. Like, it's totally fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it really is the post-Scream. Like, we wanted the pop horror, we wanted the smart horror of like, listen, as audiences, we've been trained to know what to expect, and this movie turns that on its head. It's like, well, have you?
Yeah,
because you have, but fuck off. That's what makes it so special, that it's a loving mockery of the genre.
Yeah,
it's taking all of these tropes that we know and we understand, and it's making fun of them for sure, but it's doing it in such a loving manner.
Mm-hmm.
Of, we're tired. I think that it's the sort of thing that, like, we're tired of the simple horror film. We're tired of the simple cabin sort of formula. Like, this is what happens when you want something that feels a little more heavy, that feels like you're paying attention.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good way of putting it. You're paying attention. And I think this is also, and tell me if you think otherwise, but I think this is a direct response to the torture porn explosion, you know?
Yes.
The Saw and the Hollow. And, like, the first Saw is It's like, I hate blaming the first Saw movie for everything that came after, because I think it's much smarter and more interesting than a lot of the subsequent torture porn. But like, The Hostels and Captivity and, you know, all...
Oh my God, Captivity. Yeah, right.
Saw 2 through 90 or however many they've done now. That is just stupid. It's pandering. I'm bringing in my own biases here, but it's pandering to like the lowest common denominator. It's not thoughtful. It's only about the kills. It's only about how much sadism can you put on the screen, but not even in like a really interesting way. Because there's plenty of like grindhouse movies that do that, I think, in a subversive way. But this is like very commercialized. And Cabin in the Woods comes along and is like, no, let's think critically about this. You're an idiot. I think it's no secret that college students here, not only are they really likable, and obviously they get to speak Joss Whedon dialogue, so they sound, you know, charming and smart, but like the jock, like Thor, is...
Thor.
Yeah,
he's... I love that Thor. You could never remember the names of the characters of the movies we watch.
It's another trope of Cabin. They're kind of interchangeable. Chris Hemsworth's character, obviously he's the big jock, but like he's also like a serious econ student, and like it's kind of mansplaining, but like, he recommends textbooks, and you know, the stoner is also like thoughtful and figures things out, and they're all like serious students. I don't think that's a mistake. I think it's like people are smarter than you being the torture porn industry, give them credit for. The characters are smarter. The audience is smarter. We can do better than this.
It's exactly it. We've evolved.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, we as a pop culture society have evolved. So our films have to evolve. Our characters that we're watching have to evolve. We can't watch the same ABC structure. It has to be a little smarter. It has to be a little quippier. It has to be the sort of thing of like, you think you're watching a jock, a like promiscuous lady, right. a very innocent, like they put them in all the costumes because they've got her in the short shorts. They've got him in the jock jacket.
Yeah.
They've got her in the cardigan. The other guy suddenly is wearing glasses. Like, it's so great. And it's like, no, we now in film, not just horror, understand that characters have depth.
Yeah.
And here's what happens when your horror film characters have depth.
Yeah. And I love when the stoner is like, why was he acting that way? Like, he's not a meathead. Like,
he wouldn't call him an egghead.
Yeah. Like, he's serious about his study, full academic scholarship.
Exactly.
Yeah. Thor on a full academic scholarship.
I love that, like, the stoner is the one who's, like, so aware of everything.
Yeah, right?
Because this is, like, a very terrible, like, generalization. But I feel like a lot of stoners love horror films. Mm. So that was definitely another, like, nod of, like, love letter of, like, hey, we see you.
Yeah, right?
In your basement, getting high and watching horror movies. Oh, it's so good.
Yeah. It's the Kevin Smith, right?
Yes, exactly.
You're the huge Kevin Smith fan.
It is the Kevin Smith. It's just so good. And that character, like, I'm glad that that's the character that makes it to the end, because that's the character that I think we all would think we would be in a horror movie, that we would be like super ahead of like, wait, why the fuck would we split up? Like, what are you talking about? Like, I definitely heard someone like, should I go for a walk? Like, I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
Like, it's just so, it's so great.
Yeah, I love it. We'll split up. We'll cover more ground. I love that line because it's like, wait, cover more ground?
We're in a fucking cabin.
Yeah. Also, like, we're not trying to cover ground. We're trying to not get killed.
So up the stairs and out of the house, the dumbest decision award.
Yes. The run up the stairs instead of out of the house award for the dumbest decision. It's a tough one, Shanice.
It's so hard.
Yeah.
It's
usually not hard.
No, because usually you're just kind of like, you're all fucking stupid. Why did you do this? I think it's the sort of thing that in this movie is hard to say what's the dumbest, because it's so meta that you're kind of like, oh, was that dumb? Because that actually serves a purpose later on.
Right. And every dumb decision they make is because they're being manipulated.
Yeah, which is like really weird to think about.
She's like, oh, I actually don't really want to have sex like on the grass in this dark forest.
She's like, take me inside. Yeah.
So, but like, turn up the moonlight and the pheromones.
So stupid.
Yeah.
But it, like, is also terrible because it, like, just, I don't know, it shows how simple people can be.
Yeah.
So my first dumbest decision award kind of goes to myself, and because I felt very angry at one of the scenes in this movie.
Okay.
And it's when they're in the two-way mirror and he's taking off his shirt after they've switched. And I had to rewind and pause because when I first watched it, I was so angry because I was like, he's wearing a fucking button up and he's just ripping it off over his head. Like, I was so illogically angry about it. And then I rewinded and I was like, oh, you're wearing a polo. But God damn it. I think like the dumbest decision goes to all of them. The fucking basement opens, and again, like, they can't actually, there's no proof in that moment that they should go down there. They haven't really been given anything about going down there.
No.
So if the basement door opens, you close it and you continue your truth and dare game.
Right. Totally.
But it's just so stupid. Like, that's so dumb. It truly is. And I think that, like, these characters clearly exist in a world where horror exists.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just kind of like, nah, fuck it. Because the stoner's kind of like, I don't think that's a good idea. Like, the stoner is us in that moment of like, what do you mean? This game is stupid. Please stop. But then he even falls victim and he, like, finds the film stills. And he's like, oh, what's going on?
Oh, yeah.
Everyone's stupid.
Yeah. It's like, humans are just humans. And, like, if you press the right external buttons on them, they're going to act certain ways.
But that's the other thing, is that I can't fully say that I wouldn't be curious.
Oh, 100%. I would explore everything in that basement.
This movie makes me feel stupid because I would die in a horror movie.
Well, but that's the veil of ignorance that makes what the corporation or whoever they are doing succeed, right? Because it's like, wow, this is so much like a horror movie, but horror movies aren't real, so we have nothing to worry about.
Right. No, totally.
Yeah.
So who's the biggest dummy for you?
Oh, man. It's hard. I still don't think there's any reason to read the Latin out loud.
God damn it. My fiance said the same thing.
Yeah. So I'm going to reference something. You may have heard of it because I know it was going around your office for a while. There's a great podcast called Night Call. And one of their signature moments is what's called the murder board. Have I told you about this?
No.
I'll do a very basic thing. I'm worried about, like, ripping off their podcast, like one of their best moments. But essentially, there's this house in this town, ostensibly all true, where this horrific murder happened like 30 years ago. Absolute horror movie type stuff, like bloody, nightmare, terrible. The house is set uninhabited for, you know, a generation. A woodworker who lives in town had a piece of wood brought to him by, like, these, like, teenage girls that they say is from the house. He has no way of verifying this. He has no idea. But he says that, like, they broke into the house. They, like, took a piece of wood. They want him to make a Ouija board out of it. Like, an old, weird, Eastern European-style Ouija board. And the question, which went a little viral, and which I know Mischief Media, Mischief Management weighed in on, was, do you make the Ouija board?
Oh my God.
Yes. You do.
Of course. Why the fuck not? I want to see what happens.
What? No one has ever answered that way yet. So most people say no because, like, they're not actually scared of demons or bad omens or something. I said you absolutely don't, even though the guy's like, I could really use the money. It's a fair amount of money. They're going to pay me. So, like, there's incentive to do it. I'm like, just don't fuck with that. Like, I don't believe in demons and ghosts and all that. But I also don't, like, there's some superstitious core of me that doesn't want to bring that energy into my world. And I just feel like I would bring that same hesitancy, which is non-rational and which I don't actually think is true, to the basement of that cabin. Of like, I'm not going to read this Latin out loud of this redneck torture family diary just in case. Like, I don't want that energy around me.
Which I totally get. I think that I don't know. I think I would survive in a horror movie. And I think that Cabin in the Woods does sort of prove that, because I think that I'm skeptical enough to know these things. However, I have a very intense sense of adventure that I'm like, everything would make a really good story.
Right?
So why the fuck not?
Yeah. Why not swim in the ocean?
What? Yeah. Oh, God. Because the fish will kill you.
Because the fish will kill you. That's the answer.
But yeah, so it's hard to pick a dumbest decision in this. Because
yeah.
I think that this film is so, oddly enough, so self-insert, because you're thinking about yourself as a viewer and as someone. We all watch horror movies and we're like, what would I do in that?
Right.
And this movie really like forces you to be like, what the fuck would I do in that?
Yeah.
I wouldn't be smart enough to like figure out how to like hotwire this elevator.
No, yeah.
But yeah, it's difficult to say who's dumb, because no one's dumb on purpose. Like, it's so hard, man.
Yeah. It is really hard. It almost shows that in real life, unlike in film, it's not easy to make good decisions when your circumstances are adverse.
True. Yeah. Fuck you, Cabin in the Woods. You made me think.
Right?
So this movie now.
Yeah. So this segment is when we look at movies and see how they would be different if they were made now in 2019. So this is really interesting when you think about movies that were made in like the late 70s or early 80s. Like, we've been watching a bunch of them now that we have cell phones and internet and ideas about consent and, you know, modern stuff. So it's a little bit, I don't know how to exactly explain, because this was only made 8 years ago.
And it's ahead of its time, let's be honest.
Totally. Yeah, totally it is. The one thing I can think of is maybe it would have been a little bit darker about its portrayal of corporate America, because this was made, it was made in the wake of the financial crisis, but like, it was written and shot in 2009. Obama had been elected. It was kind of a moment of general optimism in America.
We felt safe.
Yeah. We felt like things were going to get better, even if they weren't great right now. And I think it's a very different worldview for a lot of Americans right now. So the whole vision of like the happy-go-lucky corporate America, you know, like they're charming, they're nice, that whole thing might have actually come off, might have been written much darker right now.
I agree with that. I think it would have been a little more of a critical look at corporate America.
Mm-hmm.
I think we would have definitely, at the end of this movie right now, we end this movie not sure who to side with. Should she kill him? Should she help, you know, save humanity and all of this stuff? But if this movie were made now, the decision would be really easy, because we'd all be like, fuck the man.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, humanity needs to be fucking reset. Let's do it, please. Like, yesterday. Yeah. So I think it changes the end of the film a lot. I think that you're right. We would be a little more critical of corporate America. And I think that those characters wouldn't be likable.
Yeah.
But I think also, like, this movie now is kind of like the same movie.
Yeah.
But is this a movie that, like, exists after Cabin in the Woods? Like, can you get any smarter than Cabin in the Woods?
Yeah. So that is a really good question. Because when we were talking about the context for this movie, yes, you can give all the context of Joss Whedon's career and Evil Dead 2 and Shaun of the Dead and Avengers and all this like self-referential entertainment. But Cabin in the Woods, what they've done with this movie is still completely unique. They basically invented a headcanon for every horror movie ever made.
Yes.
It's astounding how well it works, how interesting it is. I don't know. I think the achievement of this, like, I read some reviews. We both, before we do this podcast, we read a bunch of reviews at the time, and a few were like, well, it's only got one idea and it's a lot, you know, it thinks it's a lot smarter than it is. And I was like, fuck you, it is the smartest idea I have heard about horror in a long time.
You're right. No, I think that, and I think that that's the sort of thing of where we've talked about this in other episodes, critics don't always like to give horror films their due.
Mm-hmm.
Because horror films aren't smart, and this is like so in your face smart that it's like, you can't fucking shit talk this. Come on. Yeah, I don't know. This movie's great. Like, this is
it's just great.
We both really love this movie, y'all.
Yeah.
Okay, so for this movie now, I do want to try this just for this movie in particular. At what point do you think you die?
Oh, I love this question. I think that I die. Important question. Am I single at this cabin?
You have to be. It depends on what character you're playing.
That's true.
Because that actually, that changes my answer too.
Right. Yeah. Assuming, so I would say, assuming I'm not playing Thor or Thor's girlfriend, then.
You don't want to make out with the Wolfman?
That was an amazing scene.
Yeah, yeah, no, you're single. You're single. I'm not gonna kill. Yeah, okay, yeah. I'm not gonna kill my boss.
Right. Oh, that's right. Yeah. So for the audience, I'm dating slash like seriously dating Shanice's boss.
So I don't want to kill you. So, yeah.
So for me, like, these are just college friends. I try to help them, but when it becomes clear that like one of them is killed and this is bad, I just flee into the woods, and I think I make it pretty far. I guess they would see me on camera and they would send some other beast after me. But I always maintain, like, against a ghost or a demon, I'm toast. But if it's just like a serial killer, it's like it's you versus me. You know, I've spent a fair amount of time in the woods and at night. I like my chances. Doesn't mean I'm going to win, but I can
see you making it pretty far.
Right?
Yeah,
no. I just, like, just start jogging.
I honestly think that you're the dude in the driving the Winnebago.
Oh yeah.
Like, you totally make it that far.
Yeah.
Because that's exactly what he wants to do. He's like, we're just gonna keep fucking driving.
Yeah, like, just get the fuck out.
And she's like, that's not gonna work, dude. Yeah. So I think that's you make it that far.
Yeah.
I don't know, it's hard to say for me personally. I think I always envision myself as the final girl. Mm-hmm. Though the meta character never really makes it. Like, that's the problem. Like, in any horror film that I would be cast in, I'm the super meta. I'm the Jamie Kennedy in Scream.
Totally.
Like, I know what's going to happen because, like, horror movies are my life. So, like, am I the stoner in that case? Because I'm, like, so on edge. Which I guess is kind of valid. Like, you think that I'd be the character that you think died and then didn't die. So, like, I would probably be him.
Yes. I think 100% that's true.
But I'm not... I don't think that I'm likable enough to be the final girl.
Well, but I think you said that you're pretty skeptical. I think that's 100% true. Like, I think you would clock that something was off right away. You, before this, you'd be like, you don't have a cousin. Yeah, like, wait, where are we going? What do you mean?
Why are we stopping here for gas? Right. What is happening?
Like, this is weird. I'm just going to go to a motel. You guys have fun.
Yeah, I think, like, that's the thing. Would I even be in this movie? Because I'd be like, right, fuck off. You're going to a cabin? I'm going to stay in the city.
Yeah, I also, you would have no problem being like, fuck you guys. I'm bailing. I'm not doing this one.
I'd be like the character at the end of, like, all those people were my friends and I'm so sad that they're all dead.
Well, I'm working through the deaths of several of my friends.
So this is an interesting movie in our arc of cabins.
Yes, it is. It is. I mean, in many ways, the apotheosis of the cabin movie. So let's review some of the things that we've talked about for previous movies. So first of all, the teenagers. Key aspect of a cabin movie is your group of young people going to the cabin.
Which Cabin in the Woods literally says, the sacrifice always requires youth.
Youth. I love that. Yeah. Yeah. And that makes sense. Like, Friday the 13th, they were like, maybe college, maybe a little after college. They seemed like in their like early 20s, but they absolutely exuded youth. Whereas Evil Dead, they're like Michigan State college students, and Cabin Fever, they're college students too, right?
I don't know. I always felt like she's going to Berkeley. So like,
oh, they might even be like,
I think their high school's like just graduated seniors, whatever. They're young and horny.
Right. Young and horny. So in this movie, our batch of young people are, A, good actors. You know, they're all like solid professional actors who know how to read a script. They have a great script to work with. So, like, they're likable. They're professional. I mean, this is what happens if you spend $30 million on a movie instead of $400,000.
However, I would like to point out that Thor's accent fucking sucks.
Oh, yeah, it sucks. That's true.
He's a great actor, but he can't play an American.
He's Australian, really? In real life?
I don't fucking know. Yeah, he's not American.
I assume they're all Australian.
You can hear the twang sometimes when you talk. I'm like, are you... What? Okay, so yeah, we've got young folks always in these movies. We've got the cabin, because it's all about... For these movies, it's always about isolation.
Yeah.
And they make that very clear in this film that, like, we have to get them. You have to go somewhere someone's warned you not to go. We get a warning in Friday the 13th. We sort of get a warning in Evil Dead.
Yep.
I don't think we get a warning in Cabin Fever.
Do we get a warning in Cabin
Fever? Oh, yeah,
yeah,
fucking
we do.
They
we
go to the weird. So, like, that's the
pancakes.
Thing. Oh, my God. Yeah. So we always get a warning.
Yeah. Which they call the Harbinger, which I love.
Super weird. Yeah. Oh, creepy.
I know.
The character creeps me out. But so it's all about isolation, because isolation is what brings on the evil. Like, Evil Dead really taught us that like, the idea of being very alone and far away from everything is what gets you killed.
Yeah, it's cut off from traditional sources of authority. And I wonder, I mean, we get the sense in all of these movies that our young people are from fairly privileged backgrounds. Like, they're usually in college or just graduated from college. They are not all, but predominantly white. And outside of Cabin in the Woods, I don't think we see a single person of color in any of these movies. And so there is something about they're facing a level of adversity for the first time in their lives that they're not really trained to deal with. And they, like, all of the normal power structures that have helped them in the past, whether it's parents or school or police or whatever, are gone. Like, they're truly isolated.
I think it's a class thing. I think it 100% is. As someone who, like, grew up in the city, and I, like, grew up in Washington Heights, I'm Dominican and Nicaraguan and Native American. Like, the idea, it, like, and this sounds so terrible, but, like, cabin movies sound like a white person problem. Like,
yes.
Because, like, of course you have the money and the time to be like, yeah, let's go spend a weekend in a cabin. Which I think is really interesting, because it's sort of, it is always college students. It's very much a class thing. It's the privilege of the opportunity to suddenly take a break and have a 4-day weekend in a cabin that is probably expensive. It's a really weird trope that I never really thought of till right now.
Yeah, totally. And you and I have had discussions where it, like, the general concept of, like, being murdered in the woods, you're like, I don't understand why people go to the woods. Or, like, you understand, but, like, it's just not something you do. Whereas I, who am both white and privileged, and grew up going to cabins and swimming in the ocean and doing all these outdoor things. I mean, it makes perfect sense to me.
I would like to say that I grew up going to a beach house.
Okay.
I know the ocean, and that's my fear of it, Will.
You know it, and so you know to fear it. Because the fish will kill you.
But this is, like, a normal thing. Like, this concept, that's not weird to you.
No, not at all.
Which is so interesting.
Yeah. It is really interesting, and it is in the background, and I don't know of any of these movies that address it, including Cabin in the Woods, but there is something about these people all of a sudden being helpless in a world that has up till then been fairly accommodating to them, and them just not really having the tools to deal with this, you know, potentially life-threatening adversity.
Right. Yeah, it's really, I think cabins is such an interesting arc and an interesting trope, because of all the movies that we've picked, weirdly enough, we've all picked movies that don't deal with cabins in the formula, which is, I think, makes sense, because I think the cabin sort of thing is a thing that you can only do once or twice. Like, that formula doesn't work over and over and over again of being in a cabin and it's a slasher. Like, Friday the 13th is Friday the 13th because it did it well.
Yeah.
But if anyone else were to do that, you get movies like The Strangers, where it's like, now it's a family of killers.
Right.
And, like, you have to redo this sort of thing.
It's a good point. That these tropes are less set than we think they are.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a lot more fluid and sort of, you can mold it into what you need it to be.
Yeah. I mean, so far we've had, if we look at the movies we've done, we had one slasher, which is a very traditional, like, human being killing other people. We had one parasite, one, like, bacteria villain.
Right.
Slash, like, systemic R. Hashtag systemic R. We've had one demon. Or
supernatural.
Like, yeah. And then we have one ancient god slash corporate America.
So, like, do we call that supernatural?
It is. And, obviously what the tools they're using are supernatural. But does the term supernatural apply if they're able to, like, deploy them. They understand how they work. Obviously, they understand how to contain them. They understand how to trigger them. Is a ghost supernatural if the corporation understands exactly how it works? Then it's just like something new and natural.
Well, that's the other thing, is that it doesn't completely feel supernatural, because we don't find out truly about the ancient gods until the end. Mm-hmm. Like, we're just told of, like, the guy downstairs, the people downstairs. But we, like, we're given from the beginning this perspective that the villains are the other humans.
Mm-hmm.
So humanity is the villain. Like, it's really fucking, it's fucked. This movie is fucked,
it's
y'all.
Fucked. It's
in a great way, but it is.
Yeah.
What an interesting movie to put in our cabin's arc.
we had to do it. So I have one question for you. Who's the hero of this movie?
Woof.
Yeah.
I think that that's hard. What makes this movie great is that there is no hero.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no need for a hero. I don't leave this movie, like, wishing that I was rooting for someone, or, like, rooting for one group, the kids or the corporate America against each other. I'm just kind of, like, 100% there for the fucking ride.
Yeah.
Do you think that there's a hero?
I think that it is a hard question, because if there is a hero, it's probably this corporation who are working to save literally all of humanity, and that the villain ultimately, besides the ancient gods who suck, but like maybe they're like natural forces.
We don't know if they suck, man.
That's true. That's true. We're believing what we're told on this. Maybe they're not going to kill all of humanity slowly. Maybe they're just going to like dismantle the power structures. I don't know. Dismantle the patriarchy. Who knows? Yeah. But like, assuming the ancient gods are like natural forces, like hurricanes suck and like floods suck, but you know, they're not really villains. They're just things that happen. Then the stoner is the villain, because his adolescent selfishness and caprice means that everyone knows and will ever know is going to get tortured to death in like a fiery demise. I'm just saying that that is a valid reading of this, I think. But I don't know, man. It's so anarchic and so all over the place. To commit to any one villain or hero means committing to a very stark moral vision, one way or the other.
Which is weird, because it's a horror movie, but it makes you think on so many levels. Like, not only is it meta in its plot, but it's meta in the way that you leave the theater.
Yeah.
Like, you're suddenly very much thinking about you as a viewer, you as a person in society, you in pop culture. You're just kind of like, you're fucked. You're kind of like, you're forced to think. It's the brain thinking about itself.
Yeah, totally.
Which sucks, which is like great, but also kind of sucks, because you're kind of like, now you have to confront all of these things of, like, do I watch too much violence? Am I into murder?
Right.
Who do I root for? Am I a cog in the machine in corporate America?
Right.
Like, fuck. So our next movie in our cabin's arc is our final movie.
Our final cabin's movie
is a weird one. We've stayed on this weird kick, y'all, and it's Sleepaway Camp.
Guys, you wondered where we went from here, where we go from Cabin in the Woods. There's only one place we can go. It's Sleepaway Camp. Let's get weird.
Fucking movie. It's going to be great. It's good. We're riding the weird wave towards the end.
Mm-hmm.
Because Sleepaway Camp is just a movie that I don't think knows what it is.
No, it doesn't. It's everything that we've seen in cabin movies. And yet, it's also just completely unique. It's just doing its own thing.
It's literally like a dartboard of, like, what the fuck can we do? Sure.
Oh, yeah. No, half the movie, well, we'll talk about it next week. But, like, there's the point at which you could cut this movie off, and it would just be a Caddyshack sequel.
Yes.
I love it.
But let us know what you think about Cabin in the Woods. Did you love it as much as we did? Do you think that it belongs in the cabin's arc? Do you believe that it belongs in a different sort of arc? And what do you think makes this movie as iconic as it is?
Totally. Our next arc will be revealed soon, so stay tuned. We're just nailing down a few possibilities. We are so excited for all of them, so it's going to be great.
But make some suggestions. You can talk to us at JumpScarePod on all platforms. And we have an email address. It's jumpscarepod@gmail.com. That's me. I'm the one tweeting and looking at stuff.
She's our socials.
Please talk to me. Yeah. And all right. Thanks, y'all.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. Jump Scare is a Mischief Media podcast. What is Mischief Media? A podcast network that takes stories seriously. Mischief Media is extraneous, a podcast that goes deep on the stories you love and comes back with a little something extra, including, right now, Supernatural and His Dark Materials. By the way, guys, I co-host the His Dark Materials pod. The HBO series is premiering next month. It's all happening. You should listen. What else is Mischief Media? Make new mistakes. Only the coolest business podcast around. Make New Mistakes is about being in business, being in charge, and being the ones to screw it all up. Melissa and Takiya host it. They are amazing, and they really get into the nitty-gritty of what it's like to be two women running a serious business in New York City, anywhere. It's a really rewarding and educational podcast. I encourage you to check it out. Also, A Story Most Queer, short fiction and nonfiction stories from some of the most exciting queer voices out there. Mischief Media, we take stories seriously.